Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, this Wednesday edition. A lot coming up on today's program. If you need a job, there are jobs out there. One of them is in construction. Matter of fact, about 200,000 jobs that need to be filled. We'll have details about that. Interesting story about what one neighbor did to settle the score with another one in Tennessee. It's just unbelievable. Of course it happened. We'll tell you about that story. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show preview and a really interesting story about what's going on in Asia with the president over there on his recent trip. A lot of embarrassment has happened. We'll have the details about that. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live here, 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Today is September the 7th. It is Wednesday, and this is Trumpet Radio Live. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. A little bit of a cloudy day. A few sprinkles. It's threatening. The sky is lowering.
It is. Yeah, close to 7, I looked outside, and all the clouds seemed like they were really close to the ground, and they were really dark. It's pretty exciting, actually.
It was one of those mornings where it has the light outside just seems weird. Like something's not right about it.
It's really orangish light.
Yeah.
It wasn't really the sunlight either, I don't think.
Right. It had that, hey, maybe there's going to be a storm sort of look to it, so... Yeah, those are kind of exciting mornings. My cat gets all nervous. he knows something's amiss. But anyway, nothing too severe, just a little bit of sprinkles here and there. A lot of stories to talk about today, some interesting headlines. We'll preview the Trumpet Daily Radio Show in the Key of David. Interesting story about what's going on with Asia. The United States has had a little bit of a trip there through Asia, the president. It's been an embarrassing trip in a lot of ways. The U.S. has been embarrassed, and so we've got some a story about that. And then a really interesting story from the Washington Post about kids and their cell phones. Problems.
No
so,
way.
So we'll take a look at that. Things get real fast sometimes, and that's the case with this story we'll look at from the Washington Post. Some good news from the baseball front. There's a ball boy from the Oakland Athletics, and he made the news because of his all-out diving attempt to save the team's bullpen. These guys, sometimes, you know, these guys are down there, and if the ball gets hit over there, they scoop it up and toss it to the fans, or they help out with various things. I've always thought that would be one of the greatest jobs as a teenager. Ball boy for, like, a major league team, whether it's basketball or baseball or anything. I've always thought that'd be just the best. Get paid for it, and you get to hang out with these cool players.
Yeah, that's true. And some of those ballparks, they have the entire bullpen or the relief pitchers right down the line. So, like in Oakland, there's a lot of room and foul territory down the left and right field lines. So basically, the ball boy could consider himself the guardian of the bullpen, sitting in front of them and trying to catch any foul balls that come rocketing their way.
This guy took his job very seriously. In the top of the sixth inning, Angels third baseman Jeffrey Marte slapped a hard line drive foul down the third baseline. The ball was heading straight for the Athletics bullpen dugout area, putting the club's players in peril, as you mentioned. Noticing this, the team's ball boy sprung into action. Though he was initially standing in front of the bullpen dugout, he sprinted full bore toward the screaming shot. The ball bounced once, but he kept coming quickly. Just as the ball hit the ground a second time, the A's ball boy laid out to try to make the catch, but he was unsuccessful.
Oh.
It tipped right off his glove. He dove for it.
Bummer.
It tipped off his glove. The ball hopped just barely over his outstretched arm, tipped his fingers, ricocheted off the bullpen wall between two relievers, and eventually hit an unfortunate A's player in the back of the neck. That player turned out to be okay, but he jokingly took his towel off and threw it down on the ground and stared at the ball boy.
Oh, no.
They say they think he was joking, so maybe he was mad.
So, you know, it's amazing because baseball players are notorious for their tempers a lot of the time because everything's calm. It's just a relaxing day at the ballpark. And then there's a pitch an inch outside that the umpire calls a strike and the guy just explodes. Yeah. So you never really know if the guy's serious or not in one of those instances.
Yeah, so the video is online if you want to watch it. And I think the guy that got hit, he had a towel over his head, and I don't think he was paying attention.
He should have been.
So he was probably
his fault.
Kind of thinking about something else, and all of a sudden he gets hit in the back of the neck with the ball, and he looks up, and there's the ball boy laying on the ground. So, yeah, the guy tried, though. I mean, he made every effort. And I was thinking, yeah, I mean, you would totally do that because you kind of would want to impress the team. Like, maybe they'll give you the call up, like, hey, you know, we need somebody at short. Of course, that would never happen, but you know, you can dream. So
exactly,
pretty interesting. At least he made the effort for it. I'm always really impressed with the ball boys in tennis. I guess I guess they have girls that do it too, but you know, they're just there and they got to be crouched down and then they sprint full out, grab the ball, run and hide behind the corners again. And I was just thinking how hard that would be if it's a 2-hour match and you're squatted down and then running constantly. You know, I've never seen one like really appear to be worn out, but nevertheless, that's a lot of activity.
You've never seen an overweight one either.
No.
Because they're running sprints for hours at a time.
Yeah.
Every time the ball is dead.
That's why they're younger. That's why you don't see 80-year-old ball boys that I know of.
I don't think so.
But it is always impressive, and especially like you say in a sport like tennis, where there's all this kind of protocol, and you got to be quiet, and you can't make noises, or you know. But I was just thinking, wow, what if it's like, you know, match point? It's real serious, and they do the whole shh. And your leg starts cramping up when you're down there. You're like, oh no, I got a Charlie horse.
Oh no.
You got Venus Williams about to hit the ball, or Serena, one of those ladies. Yeah, so pretty interesting. I don't know what they get paid, but I think that would be a pretty cool job. Be better than, I don't know, a lot of other jobs you could have as a teenager.
Yeah.
So kind of interesting. good to see the young man diving, but to no avail. Manny can always tell people that he almost, you know, fielded a major leaguer's hit, so that's kind of cool too.
And it seemed like it was hit really hard because it bounced hard off the wall to hit the guy in the neck, so it was still going.
It was zipping. And the ball boy did actually help the team because he took enough off of it.
Oh, I
see. You know, where it ticked his glove, but it took enough off to where it wouldn't be as bad as it would have been. Speaking of jobs, if you're looking for a job, they're out there. They say construction worker shortage weighs on hot U.S. housing market. Apparently, they don't have enough people working construction anymore. When the housing market collapsed a few years ago, a lot of people took off from that job and tried to do something else. And now that more people are building again, they don't have enough workers. So if you're looking for a little extra money, Grant,
I know.
Swing that hammer.
That's right. That would be a great thing to do on Sundays, especially. Offset all the sitting I do all the time.
Yeah. Get yourself one of those belts with all the tools on it. It's all about looking the part and then hopefully figuring it out from there.
Learn an actual skill for once.
It says 8 years after the housing bust drove an estimated 30% of construction workers into new fields, home builders across the country are struggling to find workers at all levels of experience. So, yeah, beginners as well, according to the National Association of Home Builders. It's interesting when you see stories like this and then you see that we have such a large number of people that are not working anymore.
That job is just too hard for people who don't really want to exert themselves at their job. A lot of, you know, college graduates who just want the high paying top level job right out of college when that's not really realistic.
Yeah. Well, and if you're good, you can make pretty good money doing this. A few years back, I had my roof redone after a storm. And watching some of those guys work was impressive. Those are heavy, you know, those packs of shingles.
Right.
Throw it up on the shoulder, just basically run up the ladder, you know, and all day doing that in the hot sun. Boy, that's a tough, tough job. So I appreciate how hard that is. But again, not everybody wants to do that. But they say, according to the estimates, there are approximately 200,000 unfilled construction jobs in the U.S., a jump of 81% in the last 2 years. 200,000.
Wow.
It's pretty solid. It says the ratio of construction job openings to hiring, as measured by the Department of Labor, is at its highest level since 2007. The labor shortage is getting worse as demand is getting stronger, according to John Corson, is the chief executive of the Home Builders Institute, a national nonprofit that trains workers in the construction field. The impact of this is twofold. Without enough workers, residential construction is trailing demand for homes, dampening the overall economy. And with labor costs rising, home builders are building more expensive homes to maintain their margins, which means they are abandoning the starter home market. That has left entry-level homes in tight supply, shutting out many would-be buyers at a time when mortgage rates are at near historic lows. And it's true, if you look for homes for sale, or if you look at new construction, I guess would be more appropriate to consider, you don't see people building moderate homes. I mean, not around here. Everything's a mini mansion.
Right.
You know, it's like, where's the new $120,000 house? You just don't see a lot of those. It's up into the $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, $100,000. And it's amazing because I have noticed that here where there's new neighborhoods going up, they're all out of the what you would consider starter home market.
Wow.
So anyway, it is interesting to see some of these homes. And I always wonder what people do. Like, what do you do to – because, you know, you can understand some people would be at a higher end of income. But when it's like neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood and they're all, you know, $500,000 homes.
Yeah, they're throwing up all these new neighborhoods with so many nice houses in them. Clearly there's a demand or else they wouldn't be building all these neighborhoods as it is. And that just shows you, I guess people do have the money for it. And it also shows you there are jobs. I've read so many pathetic articles, mostly from millennials who said, there's no jobs anywhere. I can't get a job to save my life. And it's like, well, I'm pretty sure you could get a job to save your life, especially every time we hear a story like this. And even driving down the road, there's like five restaurants that have a for hire sign out. If people want to work, the work is there. That's really the point, I think.
Yeah, and I've heard that same thing about manufacturing, that there are some manufacturing jobs, but there's nobody to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, just in different fields, there are the jobs there, but people just aren't, either don't have the qualifications, don't have the training, or aren't willing to go after it and try to learn something. Because I bet that even if, say, you or me, somebody that hasn't built a house before, to my knowledge. You haven't built a house.
I don't think so.
No. You know, if we went to a company that was looking for people and just said, look, I don't know much about this. I'm willing to learn. I'll be here. I'm guessing they'd give you a shot. And if you were a pretty good learner and you showed up on time, I don't think it would take long for you to be a very trusted and valuable employee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a matter of having some of those basic principles of showing up.
Yeah.
Because I actually, you know, I know of a builder that I talk to occasionally, and he's talking about how, you know, he does have to hire people, and half the time they don't come. He said because he knows they're on unemployment. And one of the conditions of their unemployment is that they have to show that they're looking for work. And so they'll go out and quote unquote look for work, and he'll actually say, yeah, show up Monday, and then he never sees them again. But they just want to be able to say, yes, I went out and looked for a job and then collect the unemployment. I'm not saying that's everybody on unemployment. Of course not. But I think there's a lot of people that are in that boat.
Well, there's many thousands, if not millions, who are doing that exact thing. It should also say the response of the person you were looking for work from. Yes, I was looking for work. He said yes, and I didn't show up. And that should be part of it as well, because that's just a gigantic scam.
Oh, yeah.
From what I understand, a lot of construction jobs, wouldn't they just train you on site? Because where else, if you have never worked construction before, would you learn those skills? I don't think you can really go to school. I'm sure there's some trade schools you could go to, but most of them probably don't go to trade school before they work in construction, right?
Most everybody that I know that is in that field just learn from somebody else.
Yeah.
Kind of the, you know, the apprentice sort of thing, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, well, show me how to do this. And guys, a lot of guys figure it out, and some don't.
Yeah.
And those are the guys that, you know, maybe don't do as well with it. It's not for everybody, but it is a matter of being willing to work. And
being reliable, open-minded, learning quickly just by paying attention.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it's not for everyone, but it is for probably a lot of people who aren't working right now.
Yeah. So the jobs are out there, even here in construction. They're saying there's 200,000 unfilled construction jobs in the U.S., So if you're needing some work, that might not be a bad thing to check out. And really, I think a lot of those jobs pay pretty well, mm-hmm. especially once you get a little more skilled at it.
So, a lot more than unemployment would pay. That's the thing. It's unemployment may sound nice, getting money and not having to work, but you can make way more if you would just invest some time and effort into it.
Well, and too, just the mental health that comes from working hard.
Right.
You know, I remember being a teenager, especially having some jobs that were just pretty physical labor all day, you know, 8-9 hours. And yeah, it was tiring. And but I tell you what, there was no better feeling in the world than getting home from work.
Exactly.
It felt so good to get home. And you know, I never came home from work and just kind of sat there and said, oh, what am I going to do? I was like, oh, man, I got a break here, you know. And so it really just, it's a good feeling. It's not always a great feeling getting there in the morning sometimes, but by the time you're done and the job's been accomplished, it's a good feeling. And really, you know, a teenager especially, a lot of those jobs are kind of like jobs nobody wants. Yeah. But here, if you're in construction and you're doing and you like it, you know, I would think there'd be a lot of satisfaction in that, becoming skilled, making something nice. And so I remember hearing an older gentleman who did a lot of construction years ago talk about how even the skills have declined, where people used to be more of what you'd consider like a master craftsman. Like, they didn't just throw up some shoddy thing. Like, if they built it, you knew it was quality, and there's not as many of those guys anymore either, that seems like. So times are changing.
Yeah.
They weren't playing Pokemon Go back in those days. What do you want to do today? You want to build a house or you want to follow around this imaginary thing? They say, what now? What are you talking about?
Sounds stupid. Oh, yeah, it's because it is. It is stupid.
Yeah, just interesting to see some of the things going on there with the job markets. This is a pretty cool story here. I've never heard of this happening before, so it's kind of interesting. There's a couple that welcomed their third child born on the same day for the third straight year. Three kids, one each, you know, in three successive years, each one born on the same day. So I don't know exactly how that would work, but it did. They say the 1st of September must be Mom Lauren Stevenson's lucky day after giving birth to her third child on that exact date for the third consecutive year in a row. You'd hate to have another kid now because you don't want to ruin the streak.
That's right. Wow.
They say, we were just overwhelmed with excitement and joy. Stevenson said of Dickinson, North Dakota. They were talking to ABC News about this. A healthy baby boy and the fact that he came on September 1st. The doctors, the nurses, my husband and I, we just couldn't believe it. So it's easier to remember birthdays because there's just one. Who was born on September 1st? Everyone raise your hand. You know? It's amazing. They could just pencil it in, you know, for next year too, I guess.
Yeah, well, it seems like after the first child, maybe you could say they weren't planning it. But after they had two on the same day, 2 years in a row, I'm guessing they were going for a third year in a row. They were trying to plan it that way.
Well,
how could they not?
It's pretty amazing that this happened. The doctor said she had never seen this before. Obviously, I think it's very rare. I don't know of anybody that's ever happened to. It probably has, but I don't know of anyone. But it is interesting with kids and when they're born. Sometimes it does seem to follow sort of a trend, maybe not to the exact day. But I know my son was born in the same month that my wife was, and my daughter was born in the same month that I was.
Wow.
So it just kind of worked out that way, I guess. I mean, it wasn't a big plan or anything. And then in my family, we have a lot of October birthdays. Like, a bunch of people were just born in October. My dad was, my brother was, I was, and my daughter was. So it is. I don't know if there's something to it, you know, why it works out that way.
It's strange.
But, yeah.
My dad and my aunt have the same birthday. My sister and I have a birthday that's 2 days apart. And my other brother and sister have a birthday that's 1 day apart.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you guys are all pretty close, too.
Pretty close.
Yeah. My daughter, she almost shared the same birthday with my dad. But she was born just after midnight, so she just missed it.
Oh, I thought of another one. My uncle and his son have the same birthday as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. It'd be interesting to do. I wonder if somebody's done a study into that. If they have a thought on why it happens that way. But
people trying it probably on purpose.
Maybe. You got like a 1 in 12 shot for the month.
So that's right.
it's bound to be in there somewhere. So yeah, kind of interesting to see that happen. But this was particularly unusual. Third child born on the same day for third straight year. So the doctor said she'd be happy to throw him a party every year.
So does she love September 1st, or does she somewhat dread it?
That's what I was wondering.
Because it's great to have a child, but to experience the pain that comes along with it 3 years in a row may make you dread that day as well, possibly.
That's a lot of babies rapid fire, too.
Yeah.
You know, the mom needs a chance to kind of recover and kind of regain her strength and so forth. So, yeah, that's rapid fire.
I hope she doesn't have a job outside the home. That's too tiring. She needs to take a nap, I think.
Take a breather, and yeah, that's a lot of babies, a lot of little ones to have, three and under, you know, three of them run around the house. But well, Grant, you'll know about that soon enough.
That's right.
That's not an announcement, by the way. That's just a general comment.
Yeah, that's not a scoop.
No, there's no scoop there.
We all hope to have kids, I think.
Yeah,
most people
do. Yeah, yeah, they're a lot of fun. They say funny things too sometimes, especially. it's always funny to me when they're very young and they say something that's sort of adultish.
Mm-hmm.
For example, last night we were driving and had a song come on, and I was listening. I had my phone plugged into the car and we were listening to some music, and this song came on, and my daughter, who is four, she said, "This song is familiar to me." I was like, "Who are you? What are you, like 40 years old?"
Yeah.
Song like, is familiar.
Where has she ever heard the word familiar?
Yeah.
I remember one time my uncle told a story, and he was just so blown away that his young son at the time knew the word fake. He was looking at this coat pocket, and you know how sometimes the pocket in the front it's actually stitched up, so it's not really a pocket at all. And he said, "Hey, this pocket is fake." And he was like, what, 3 years old or something?
Yeah.
And it's like way out of his league in terms of vocabulary at that age, probably.
Yeah, it is a little surprising when that happens. And I told her, I said, that was good word usage.
It is.
Tremendous job. This song is familiar to me.
They say that CEOs have a better vocabulary than we do, and that's part of why they're so successful.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and then sometimes kids, too, they'll describe something in a way that it sort of works, but it not really. actually yesterday as well, that my wife bought some vegetable juice, V8 juice, and my daughter smelled it and she said, "This smells squishy." It smells squishy.
How can that be?
And I thought, well, that's kind of true, because if you squish a vegetable, it would smell like that. So that kind of makes sense. But
yeah, it's a bit of a stretch, but I can see where I can see the thought process leading to that word.
Every parent's got a whole Rolodex of those types of moments and funny stories, and thinking, wow, that's interesting. What goes on in the mind, the little minds. Some of the stories going on. This one here is, of course, from our famous "Of Course This Happened" segment. If you're going to have a problem with your neighbor, don't do it in Tennessee. It gets real, real fast. A dispute between, and we have one of the gentlemen that I know likes to listen to our show is originally from Tennessee. So if he's tuning in today, I know that he will appreciate this. And hopefully wasn't involved. A dispute between neighbors led one man to take heavy machinery to his neighbor's home and destroy it, according to Tipton County Sheriff's Department. So they had a little bit of a disagreement of some kind, and the neighbor thought, "I'm just going to bulldoze his house."
I saw the headline for this yesterday, and I'm just hoping desperately that we would talk about it today.
You know, sometimes you wonder, you think, does my neighbor have an issue with me? And this, you don't have to wonder anymore.
No.
He bulldozed your house. The incident happened Sunday in the 700 block of Grimes Road in Drummond's, Tennessee. Deputies started receiving calls from that area on Friday regarding a neighbor that had fired multiple shots into the woods. So this has been going on for a few days. Deputies talked to the neighbor, John Higdon, he's 48, who said there were multiple people hiding in and running from the woods wearing camouflage suits. Higdon told deputies he fired the shots into the woods at the people wearing the suits.
Not a good idea.
Why don't you just say, like, "Hey, what's going on?" I don't know what you should do. It doesn't seem like you should fire into the woods.
At least say that you shot into the air instead of saying you fired directly at the people.
Yeah. Deputies checked the area and found no evidence of anyone in the woods. After deputies left, a second complaint was filed regarding shots being fired again. Deputies returned and arrested Higdon for reckless endangerment. The incident followed early reports in the week from Higdon, who told authorities that approximately five people were shining lights into his residence, and he believed it was his neighbor's employees. The next day after Higdon had been arrested, a neighbor called the sheriff's office and said they could see and hear a large piece of orange equipment bulldozing down their neighbor's home. Deputies went to the area and found Higdon's home had been destroyed. Detectives found an orange backhoe at a neighbor's house. It's kind of hard to hide the fact that you did it. You know, people are like, there was a giant orange machine out there destroying the house. And then they look around, they're like, well, there's a giant orange machine. Did you do that? The neighbor, 57-year-old Edgar Dallas McClellan, was arrested for aggravated criminal trespassing and felony vandalism. That's what they call it when you bulldoze a house.
Felony vandalism.
Yeah.
Aggravated criminal trespassing.
Yeah.
Interesting. What's the prison sentence for that? That's what I want to know.
Well, they say Sammy Higdon here and John Higdon's brother said that he doesn't know why McClellan would want to do something like that to his brother. He said the two were not into a feud, contrary to what the deputy said. So Sammy Higdon, the brother of the guy whose house was bulldozed, says, don't know why. Never had beef with him. No explanation. Never had beef with him. Maybe that's why you never invited him over for dinner.
Not too hospitable to your neighbor.
I believe he means never had a beef with him.
Yeah.
Sammy Higdon is now forced to live in a camper next to where his home once stood.
Oh, wow.
It's not funny, but you can imagine driving by and being like, yeah, that guy's in a camper now because his house got bulldozed by his neighbor.
So you have one guy shooting at his neighbor's employees, the neighbor retaliating by bulldozing the house.
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah, that's a good question.
A nuclear bomb dropped on the other house.
It's escalating.
It really is.
It says, this brother said, or Sammy Higdon, he's living in the trailer. It says, it's the end result of a feud Tipton County investigators said got out of control. Yes, it did.
Indeed.
This man over here decides to come over here at 2 o'clock in the morning with a bulldozer, a tractor, and starts pushing the house down, Sammy said. He run the tractor through both bedrooms where the bed sits. Well, yeah, that's what a bedroom is. Interesting, gentlemen. I still don't know what to believe, he said. Well, I don't know. I know what to believe. Your house got bulldozed. Your brother's house.
That's a funny guy.
Yeah. He bulldozed through the bedrooms, you know, where the bed sits. There's two bedrooms, but the bed sits. So there's just one bed? I'm confused.
I don't know.
It's a big one. It sits in both rooms. I don't know. Both of the men are now free on bond and are awaiting the court date to answer your question there.
Wow.
They'll figure it out from here. They expect additional charges to be filed. You know, just to be a fly in the courtroom in that one would almost be worth it to hear the back and forth between these two.
Well, isn't it a little awkward that they're probably returning home?
Yeah.
Out on bond?
Yeah.
Returning home and being neighbors again after one guy shoots at the neighbor's employees and the neighbor retaliates by bulldozing his house.
Right.
And they're going to live right next to each other now.
Yeah. And the guy's in a camper and he looks out his little camper window and the guy's still in his house.
Oh.
He'd be so mad.
Yeah. There has to be retaliation. I mean, you can't envision it any other way.
No. And he looks out and he can see the orange, you know, backhoe sitting there. You know, it'd just be like, are you serious?
Just leave it there to mess with his neighbor.
Oh, just terrible. So yeah, that's one of those, of course, that happened. And that's how they get justice there in Tennessee. They don't mess around.
Yeah.
And bulldoze your house. So very interesting story there. And I hope there is an update. I do want to know what happens to these poor souls. But it is interesting. It does. This is an extreme example, of course. But mankind, it just can't get along with each other. They just get mad, and then, like you say, it escalates, and then the next one has to retaliate, and the next one, and eventually people end up in jail or dead. I mean, that's the way it goes.
It almost makes you want to live in an armed fortress where people just can't reach you because, I mean, you wake up and a guy's bulldozing your house. How can that even be possible? People are just living next to each other. There's not a whole lot of protection from maniacs out there.
Now it's amazing too. I just wonder what the thought process was where the guy's like, that's it. Get the bulldozer or get the backhoe. It's over. You know, I'm going to take care of this once and for all. There's a construction job for somebody.
Yeah.
200,001 jobs open. Build the guy's house back.
That's right.
So anyway, if we've got any listeners online there in Tennessee, and I think there are some, Be careful.
Yeah.
Don't mess with your neighbors. Some of the stories that are happening around the world today, the interesting and some of the crazy ones, too. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. And on Fridays, we usually have a new one for you. We'll have a new one coming up this Friday as well, and some good repeats throughout the week as well. You can find all of those archives online at thetrumpet.com or kpcg.fm as well. There's always free literature that's offered and a phone number given at the end, so you can call in if you'd like to get the literature. Or you can download it at thetrumpet.com as well. Lots of ways to get that information. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. A couple of topics discussed in particular. One is the continued push for the an EU army. And in discussing that in the beginning, he was kind of lamenting how, in a way, you hate to talk about it again because it's been talked about. But it's such a big issue. You do have to talk about it. I mean, anyone remember the last time there was an army over there?
Yeah, I love how he spends a couple programs at a time to go in depth on some of these topics, and he doesn't need to make an apology. There's just so much to cover,
yeah.
And it's all so interesting every single time. The EU army, people should be terrified of that, and it should never get old hearing about it. We need to be educated about what's coming.
Well, and there's, as he mentioned, there's sort of this idea that, well, you know, it would be good to have one because there are so many terrorist organizations, so many other groups that people are really afraid of. And so the EU doesn't seem so bad. You know, they're pretty civilized. It's a pretty, you know, modern culture as compared to ISIS or something like that. And so in comparison, it looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm reading a pretty interesting book now about some of the just the rise of their military before World War II. And one of the things that one of the expressions they had back then was guns before butter. Another, because they were trying, people were trying to get on their feet economically after the Depression and some of the problems after World War I and the Nazi government when it came into power. And it came in sort of subtly, I guess, to a point. They were elected. And, you know, a lot of promises, but then things turned. And, but they said, look, you know, we need to arm for war. We need to build a military. So, you know, sorry, you're not going to get your butter because we're making guns. We're buying guns. We're getting material. And they learned something very valuable in the First World War. And they learned that, what happened was the UK had a blockade with a naval blockade. And so supplies couldn't get into Germany. And it really hurt them. And so they said, okay, we're going to make sure we're more self-sufficient. We're going to move east. And we're going to conquer some of that region so the UK can't block us again.
Wow.
So they learned from World War I to World War II. How about World War II to World War III? Now, people act like that could never happen, but come on now. History is the history of man is a history of war, right? That's what Churchill said.
Right.
So what have they learned from the last two? And mm-hmm. what are they doing now to change it? That's something to consider.
And like you said, a lot of people just can't imagine a third world war, or they can't imagine Germany going back to those warlike roots. But you hear about a culture in Europe, they enjoy high culture there. They enjoy top class art and theater, as if that would actually deter them from making war. One of the most high cultured individuals ever was Charlemagne, and he waded through rivers of blood. And that was one of the, it was like right at the back of the beginning of the Holy Roman Empire. So it doesn't keep you from engaging in war just because you have high culture, which is a lot of people's logic now.
Well, in a lot of cases, the high culture in that sense is it actually kind of leads into war because they want to spread their culture.
Yeah.
It's a culture clash, and it's a clash right now in Europe between Catholicism, really, and Islam. And that's what the culture clash is. And so, you know, Germany wants to, Europe wants to spread its culture. Everybody wants to dominate. You know, they may not be sitting there thinking that every second of every day, but at the end of the day, yeah, people want to dominate, right? Sports teams want to win. They want to be the champion.
Yeah.
Countries want to rule the world.
That's
the way it goes. And so it is developing pretty rapidly. And so really interesting program. Have to keep up to date with what's going on there. And, of course, he was right. Is a booklet you can get for free at thetrumpet.com, and it highlights what Herbert Armstrong taught about that for, 50, 60, 70 years. So a lot of warnings have been going on since World War II about what you can expect to see, and now it's all it is all forming. So pretty interesting. And that's one of the great things about, say, the radio medium is that you can hear updates every day. You know, live, this is what's happening, this is what's going on. It really keeps you up to date. Another thing talked about today on the Trump Daily Radio Show is Iran. They continue to embarrass the United States, and Iran is working to dominate the Middle East. They don't make a secret of that. And they're just continually embarrassing us, and we're going to talk more about some of the embarrassment in Asia in our next segment. So this is going on. There was a story last night from CNN Politics tying into this. Iran escalates high seas harassment of U.S. Navy. So they've been bothering us. It's like a fly bothering you when you're sitting on your patio. Got to get rid of it, though, or it's going to keep bothering you. It says seven Iranian fast attack boats were involved in an unsafe encounter with the USS Firebolt over the weekend, with one Iranian craft coming to a stop in front of the American ship, the U.S. defense official told CNN Tuesday. The provocative maneuver, which on Sunday brought the Iranian boat within 100 yards of the Firebolt, a coastal patrol boat that carries a crew of about 30, was assessed by the U.S. to be unsafe and unprofessional. Whoa. And could have led to a collision. I just love their talk. Oh, it was unsafe and unprofessional. It was an act of war is what it was. They say there have been 31 unsafe America encounters with Iranian vessels in the Persian Gulf so far this year, up from 23 in all of 2015. So we signed this nuclear agreement, give them everything they want, over $1 billion in cash too. Thank you very much. And they increase their attacks of us there in the Persian Gulf.
Amazing. We're, you know, you just see strong diplomacy at work here. It's working just incredibly. It's just amazing because these boats going right in front of our ships like that, that usually would be cause for just complete annihilation of the boat. And now we swerve out of the way. How about just running the boat over if it stays in your path? What's wrong with that? Yeah. It's asking for it. It's parking itself right in your path. And yeah, we can't do anything about that.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable, but it's what's going on, and it continues to happen. So Iran just keeps pestering the U.S., and right now they're not in a position to, you know, deal with a serious U.S. attack, but give it time, and they're preparing for that inevitability. And, oh, by the way, you know, too, talking about Germany back in leading up to World War II, according to, you know, the treaties after World War I, they were not allowed to arm. But you know what? You're going to do it anyway, mm-hmm, secretly. So, you know, we signed a piece of paper with Iran. You think they might not do it? Is there any historical precedent of people being like, yeah, I'm not going to do that, though?
Right. It happens all the time.
It's constantly.
Right, because you sign a paper does not mean you want to leave your nation relatively helpless compared to others. So if you can build some weapons and violate a treaty and face no consequences, and in the process strengthen your nation, why wouldn't you do it every single time?
And just as a military strategist, I don't think you have to be a real genius to figure this out. Iran doesn't have the manpower, and they don't have enough weaponry to fight the U.S. or Europe or somebody. But there's one thing that would be the great equalizer. What would be that one thing that could equal all the fighting positions?
Probably us giving them things and conceding to them all the time.
Yeah, that and exactly what we're giving to them, which is the nuclear weapon.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the one thing they need.
Yep.
To equal the, you know, level the playing field. And we are, like you say, giving it to them.
We are.
I mean, the thing that would keep that field unequaled or uneven is that they couldn't get it, probably. But we've given it to them, or given them access to it. So as if Iran is sitting there, you know, oh, we just want peaceful power. No, they want to dominate the world. They don't want peaceful nuclear power. They want to annihilate other nations.
And they say it repeatedly. That's the frustrating part is we say, well, Islam's a peaceful religion, and they don't really mean that. They're just trying to fire up their people. They never say that to us in their English translations. Well, that's the thing. They say something nicer, maybe in English, and then they say something mean in Arabic. And even now, they're not that nice in English either.
Yeah.
So what is there to confuse about this?
It's a crazy situation. More talked about there on the Trumpet Daily radio show with your host Stephen Fleury. And you know, Grant, I was wondering if we were going to have enough content for today. We have got more than enough content for today.
Yes, we do.
We were going to go to a break, and I'm like, no. No break. Right into the next story.
All right.
This is a story you've got for us. Obama invites embarrassment in Asia. It ties into the whole Iran situation just as far as the way the U.S. is being treated on the world scene. It says, lead from behindism, which is a new expression, has emboldened leaders around the globe to disrespect America.
Yeah, wow. What an intro to this article as well. I'll just read it word for word because it is so memorable and humorous. It says, over the weekend, I saw a couple 20-year-old hipster kids buying actual records at Barnes & Noble. For younger records, a record is like a gigantic CD, but with inferior sound quality. That's debatable. I watched these bearded, skinny jeans-wearing future denizens of their parents' basements flip through the records, and I wondered, is there a word that means feeling nostalgic for something you never experienced? There should be. I'd have used it to describe these two kids who were born in the age of free AOL CDs and grew up with MP3s, but apparently missed the music listening experience of the early 80s. I wonder what else they missed from before they were born. Garbage Pail Kids? Card catalogs? Those huge gray cell phones? Or maybe something substantive. How about a president with a sound foreign policy?
Wow.
So that's where it ends up.
He led us down the path there. I was like,
sure
now
did.
Records and Barnes & Noble. And
where's this going?
But right. I mean, yeah, this is the new trend. As they say, this lead from behindism, which, by the way, the actual term for that is following.
It is. It's impossible to actually lead from behind.
Yeah.
there is an analogy for leading from behind. They say it's like grilling some burgers in the oven, which no one does, while getting drunk on non-alcoholic beer, which is impossible. So it makes no sense. There's so many funny phrases like that throughout this article. You can find it on LifeZet, which is like saying Gazette, but LifeZet. And it's a really good website in general, just with a lot of great articles. It also says that President Obama is the Energizer Bunny of international humiliation, and he kept going and going this week.
Well, you know what's crazy is that here on the home front in the United States, he won't tolerate anyone at any level questioning, you know, anything. The media, there's plenty that's been written where if you in the media, you know, ask the wrong question or say the wrong thing, they're not going to address you. They will not talk to you. But then you go overseas, and it's a completely different story. You know, we were embarrassed in China at the airport, which everybody knows about. Of course, the Philippine president came out and just used some pretty derogatory terms to describe the president and I guess in a way threaten him on some level. He sort of backed off of that, but, you know, he doesn't mean it. He's just doing what he thinks he has to do at this point. Mm-hmm. And the president's response to the Philippine president was to say, well, he's a colorful individual or something to that effect. Well, yeah. So, again, like you say, it's been a tour of embarrassment over there. And it just keeps going and going.
It does. It never stops. And this is nothing new. Just because it's happening on this Asian trip does not mean it's a first-time occurrence. This is just us recounting details that have taken place all over the world in the last 8 years. This article brings up examples from Cuba when Raul Castro didn't greet Mr. Obama at the airport, and even King Salman insulted Mr. Obama when he visited Saudi Arabia. It's in vogue to jam a finger in the eye of the U.S., this writer writes. He says, as far as I can tell, leading from behindism seems to involve three guiding principles. The first one, always say you're sorry, and then in parentheses, psst, your American history is showing. And he talks about how Mr. Obama's entire presidency has been an apology tour, even though they just call it reckoning with history. They just have been going around apologizing to every nation that they may have ever offended or attacked or had any sort of conflict with in the past.
Yeah, and that's such a skewed view of history because every nation has had problems, you know, and has done things they shouldn't have done. And if you look at the history of the last two world wars, we didn't start them. we didn't start them, you know, and so it's a situation where we're being made to be the bad guy, and when really we've kept, in general, the peace of the world for the last century and more. There's nothing to apologize there for.
Yeah, citizens around the world, if they're clear-headed, should consider America heroes for what they did in World War II. The only thing they might be frustrated with is how long it took America to join that war.
Yep.
And all the destruction that was caused before America ended it. It's not that America's going around bullying other parts of the world. They're solving problems. They're basically policing the world. That's a great thing to have when a benevolent superpower is in charge. If you get some crazy power in charge, like what if Russia or China was in charge of the world? Would they care about fixing up some issue in Europe or Africa? Would they go on all these humanitarian aid missions? It just wouldn't happen. It's not too hard to imagine that at all. And yet America is, apparently we need to apologize for all these great things that America has done throughout its entire history. It talks about how if Mr. Obama went down to Mexico to meet with their president, history tells us he would bow to Nieto, apologize for America's alpha nation attitude, and beg for friendship. It's like a kid who thinks the bully will leave him alone if he gives the bully an extra $5 on top of his lunch money.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's a great analogy because that's what we're doing. We're just, you know, I'm so sorry. Please be our friend. Sorry for what? And, you know,
And we give them things. The thing is, if you're dealing with a bully or a hostile nation and we keep giving them more, the hostile nation is going to keep trying exactly what they were doing before they received all these gifts. So Iran, we're giving them billions of dollars and we're returning a lot of their terrorists. Iran hasn't had to change much to get those things. So why would they change now after receiving those gifts?
Well, nations like that only respect power. They don't respect weakness.
No.
They take advantage of it and they exploit weakness, which is what they're doing now.
Yeah, and it's amazing too because Mr. Obama talks about building relationships based on mutual respect. There's a big difference between a nation liking you and a nation respecting you. It seems like he wants nations to like him, but at the same time, they're disrespecting us more than ever, and they even hate us more than ever. We're trying to be nice to them and give them things. It's not even making them like us more, much less respect us and fear us and be afraid to cross us in any way.
Yeah, the hatred and disdain towards the U.S. and really the leadership of the U.S. is palpable. I mean, you can taste it.
Yeah.
They really do. They really do have a certain hatred there, and it is growing. And you know, it seems like they're almost kind of in a competition to kind of one-up each other in terms of how they can embarrass us.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. You can read the rest of that. Obama invites embarrassment in Asia. Lead from behindism has emboldened leaders around the globe to disrespect America. It's really interesting. It's at lifeset.com. One other story to touch on real briefly here before we close today. If you are, you've got a young person in your house that you are a parent of, you probably have thought about the old smartphone issue. This is from the Washington Post, pretty explosive write-up. It's entitled, "And Everyone Saw It."
Ooh.
The seventh grader's sext was meant to impress this girl. She, of course, that's referring to sending an inappropriate picture in a text message. This girl was coaxed by this young guy, again, seventh graders, 13-year-olds. She sent it to him, and then he shared it with everybody else. It nearly destroyed her, it says. And just a couple of the I guess, lowlights here. It says she could not show her face in the seventh grade. She had to play sick. All day she lay crumpled on the couch in the aftermath of this. She had heard her dad come in from work, and then she heard the phone ring. And then he was barreling out of the kitchen, the phone still in his hand. And he said to her, "Your principal called. What pictures is he talking about?" A few months before, Maureen, I don't think that's her real name, had started messaging with a tall, athletic boy in her class. They weren't officially dating. Well, they shouldn't be dating at that age anyway, but they talked every day. For weeks, he asked for her picture. When she sent one, he asked for more. She liked him. She believed him when he said he would delete them. By March, the middle school crush had fizzled, as they do, but he still had the photos. One day, another girl in their class saw one of them, and the next day, while Maureen was hiding at home, she says he texted it around the lunchroom. Law enforcement agencies could have told her parents how truly ordinary the situation is. It happens a lot. This sexting, as it's called, has gained a presence in every kind of school, rich and poor, urban and rural, big and small. As phones make their way into the hands of younger and younger kids, the incidents have grown more complex. Students collect their peers' nude photos in passcode-protected Dropboxes, private Instagram accounts, and apps disguised as calculators. Is that a calculator on the phone? Nope, that's an app that they're using. In Massachusetts alone, the state police computer crimes unit gets multiple calls a month from schools needing its intervention. But the story hardly ends when punishment is handed out for every scandal reported. An unknown multitude of parents and teens, mostly girls, are just beginning to grasp what it means to live in a world where nothing digital ever truly disappears. What do you do when your 13-year-old takes photos of herself to impress a boy, and now she's crying, stomping up the stairs, slamming her door, screaming, "You don't understand." Her peers responded to the pictures that she sent. They said it was gross. They called her some other names, and they told her to kill herself. Her parents thought about sending her back to school the next town over, but the next town knew, too.
Oof.
They said they just felt like they couldn't fix it. She had just gotten her first cell phone that year when she entered seventh grade. They were having a debate. Do we get her a cell phone or not? We don't want to be those parents that don't let their kids have a phone. Well, now they can't undo it.
Wow.
They say after the incident, they had taken away her phone. Now they took it away. But she was still finding out what kids were saying about her. The longer she stayed out of school, the worse the rumors. And so she started to cut herself, as kids do sometimes for some reason. And so they have to now keep razors away from her as well as phones. It was like the light in Maureen had been powered off. She used to be a pretty lively kid. Once she took a whole handful of Prozac, coming dangerously close to becoming another headline about a sexting scandal leading to suicide. Something to consider.
Yeah.
So right up at the Washington Post, young kids with phones, what are they going to do with them? Sometimes they're not too serious. Sometimes it's very serious. And they're very good at hiding it.
Yeah, and I know from experience, in almost every case, it is the boys who are trying to initiate these kind of inappropriate contacts. A lot of the boys around me in public school were constantly asking girls for things like that, and they would show it to their friends if they received a picture. And I'm sure all of them said that to the girl that they would not show anybody.
Right.
That's just not reality at all. And it's like the girl feels like no guys will ever like them unless they compromise morally.
That's right. And that was a situation with this young lady where she was never quite as cool as she wanted to be. She never was quite on the inside like she wanted to be. So she thought this would be the ticket, and ended up, you know, ruining her life to a point.
It should ruin the boy's life. There should be some huge consequence. I don't know much about how they would deal with that, but
a couple days suspension in this case.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Suspension, too, doesn't seem like much of a punishment. I never got suspended, but what is it other than a couple days off school?
Yeah.
Unless your parents really punish you when you're at home.
Right. And see, the thing is, too, one of the other things in this story is that, see, the boys don't tell the truth about it. They say, well, she sent it to me. I didn't want it. She sent it. She initiated it.
That's not reality in, like, more than 99% of cases, I'm going to guess.
Right.
The girl's not like, hey, you want a naked picture? That's just that girls don't think that way in general. The guys do.
Yeah. So if you're a parent of a young fellow or a young lady, got to really pay attention to this. And they wanted her to have the phone. They didn't want her to, you know, be those, like I said, like those parents that wouldn't allow a phone. But then, well, after it all happened, they took it away anyway.
Just get a brick phone that can do nothing but call and text. Oh. I mean, at least that way you might be able to communicate in a basic way, but you can't send pictures and get yourself in trouble.
Yeah.
You can't just trust a 13-year-old with all this power at his or her fingertips to use it responsibly all the time. It only takes one mistake.
There's another story today. We don't have time for it, but it's also at the Washington Post. They're kind of hitting on this topic, I think, today, talking about how predators are going after the kids, too, through gaming, through all kinds of things, and they call it bunny hunting.
Wow.
So that's the world we live in. Got to be careful with the technology. That'll do it for us today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Wednesday. Make sure you listen for the Key of David, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and the Trumpet Hour program. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.
Listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.